George, come on here and defend yourself. How much Bitcoin do you need to retire? And what do you think the true value of this orange coin is?
For just the average, compound interest is, Einstein called it the eighth wonder of the world. Inception, it's 226% a year average. Over the last 5 years, it's been about 55%. So if you stick 55% in there and you hit the numbers, you know what you're going to come up with? You're going to come up with 64 million. It doesn't matter what models I follow. I look at a lot of models, and guess what? They're all based on, we have a limited time left to do what we're doing. This train is going to leave the station. This is unheard of. They've got 40% of their holdings in one company, MicroStrategy, now called Strategy. So what I'm really talking about is not so much gold collapsing. I just think that Bitcoin is on a path that is going to water people's eyes. Now, it is a 0-to-1 event. I mean, this is a once in species thing. You know, God help us if we see a sovereign state go all in on Bitcoin. Not that they aren't now. I actually think that there are nations that are stacking. But what I'm trying to say is somebody comes out, like not a Bhutan, but, you know, a major country, and they're just stacking Bitcoin. It's going to be a come to Jesus moment for a lot of people.
You can't price a new system in the old system. So do you think that there's a point where all of these models seemingly break, and that point is coming soon? Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, George Bodine in the house, who's making waves on Bitcoin podcasts about a very bold prediction about what he thinks Bitcoin price should be and how much Bitcoin you need to retire. So George, come on here and defend yourself. How much Bitcoin do you need to retire? And what do you think the true value of this orange coin is?
Well, thanks. I appreciate you having me on here. You know, the good thing is I'm right now, the only reason I'm doing some of these podcasts when I haven't done anything in the past is I'm trying to help people understand what it is that they're holding when they hold Bitcoin and where it's going and how important it is for your future. And, you know, before I say anything about price and stuff, you know, people need to understand that everything I say today, don't take it as financial advice. In fact, I have no financial training whatsoever in any way, shape, or form in my background. I've done everything you can imagine, from working 2 miles underground to flying Navy fighter jets and Top Gun. So, but none of it's got anything to do with finance. You know, that segment that you mentioned there got a lot of not just controversy or traction or however, it was just talked about a lot. And the reason is, you know, I've always felt that for just the average hodler, if you could get yourself up to a tenth of a Bitcoin, and you're younger, and I mean, look at you, your age, you know, people can't see me on the screen. I'm just an old fart, an old boomer. And you know what? For me, you know, I'm not looking at 20 years out there on the horizon like every single person. If anybody's your age right now, if you're looking at less than a 20-year horizon, you know, what the hell are you going to do? Let's just say that I gave you $1 billion, a bag full of Bitcoin right now. What would you do? You go sit on your ass and eat donuts or something? You've got work to do. You've got things to do, and you got to stay active and doing things. And 20 years will go like that. You won't even know it. It'll just be gone so fast. You'll be sitting here like me one of these days. Although I can still kick some major ass, but I'm telling you right now, you're going to be at a position where, you know, you're going to be looking back on your life. And I feel, and I'll tell you the reason why. So let's talk about it for a minute. First off, wait a minute. I'm going to have a beer. It's damn close to 5 o'clock right now here. I'm going to show you a neat little trick. When I was in the Navy, I hope this works. When I was in the Navy, I was on an island. We were going by an island one time, and the Navy, we hadn't been into a port in a long time. And so they thought they would appease us because we were all getting pissy. As we were going by this island, they said, hey, we own this island. The Navy did. And there's some guys, troops on there and stuff. And I mean, there were some women on board the island. And they said, we're going to stop here and let you go on there and have some fun. And so I did. But I was on a beach in there and drinking with the rest of the guys, having a good time. But we didn't have a bottle opener. And I was going to open my beer up, but I thought, I can't, you know, I was going to do something. You know how you knock them around. Next thing you know, you break them. This guy came up. I don't know if you can see this or not, but he took like a bottle of water here and just opened it. It was really amazing. And I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. Oh,
well. You're getting camera shy here, George.
Nah, it doesn't matter. So look, what I'm trying to say is when you get a tenth of a Bitcoin, just go out there and do something for me. Go online and type in reverse CAGR calculator, C-A-G-A-R. And you need to just put in a few things. If you're a Bitcoiner, you should already be doing this anyway. You should have some idea where you're going in life. And right now we can get a tenth of a Bitcoin for what? I think it's like 10,000 or something. Although everybody's in a fit today. It's like it's crashing. What's it gone down? Like 25%? I mean, some of these people are the weak lettuce hands. I've never seen anything like this. But anyway, so a toast. If you go into that calculator, all you got to do is put a tenth of a Bitcoin in there. So stick in 10 grand and put in the 20 years, like I said. And why? Because compound interest is, Einstein called it the eighth wonder of the world. Now, I don't know if he really said that, but it's attributed to him. And what he was trying to explain to people is that with compound interest, you don't even really know what's going on. You don't even see what's building in front of your eyes until the very end of it. So stick in 10,000, put in the 20 years. And at the time I used a CAGR of cumulative annual growth return for Bitcoin over the last, well, since its inception, it's 226% a year average. Over the last 5 years, it's been about 55%. So if you stick 55% in there and you hit the numbers, you know what you're going to come up with? You're going to come up with 64 million. And you know what else? If you look at it at 10 years, it's nothing. I can't even remember what it is. It's like less than $1 million. It might be $8 million. So it all happens at the very end. And it happens because if you're patient and you hodl and you don't lose the damn Bitcoin, you're going to end up with that. Now, a lot of people push back and it's valid. I mean, this is true. You know, people are saying that we're going to have decreasing returns going forward. I have no idea if that's true or not. People are talking about decreased volatility over the next cycle here. Are we going to have that? But let's just say you put your own number in then. Let's say you use 40%. So stick 40% in there. Again, at 10 years, it's like $250,000. It's nothing. But you know what? If you leave it in there, you leave it till 20 years, it comes out to like $8 or $9 million. And if you were sitting where you're sitting right now in that seat and you had $9 million worth of fucking Bitcoin, do you think that you could be happy? Do you think you could live your life? And so what I'm trying to say, you got to understand what you hold. You are holding the greatest monetary invention in the history of mankind. You are holding something that has had more average annual returns than any other asset on planet Earth. And it is nascent. Its adoption rate might be at 3%, maybe 5% max. And you have got this runway in front of you that is going to explode. All you got to do, you know, just look between your legs. Now you're sitting on a three-legged stool. Don't be looking at your whatever. Just look at the legs and say, I'm going to do three things. I am going to get as much Bitcoin. I'm going to stack Bitcoin like a smart psychopath. I am going to hodl the Bitcoin. I don't care what you got to do. Read, study podcasts like this. Do whatever it is you got to do. You know, call a helpline, but you got to hold on to the Bitcoin. And then the last thing you got to do is you can't lose it. And there's so many ways to lose it. This last cycle was brutal to watch people losing their Bitcoin. I mean, people were totally wiped out from margin, leverage, a bunch of jackass stuff they were doing, altcoins. I mean, so when I talk about these prices, they probably seem, you know, astronomical to you. But you know what? I don't think you understand the power of cumulative interest and compound interest, I should say. So to do that, stick your own numbers in the calculator. You come up with what you think it's going to be, and then make sure you hold on to the damn thing.
Amen to that. But you've been studying a lot of different things, and we'll get into your background as it's extensive and it seems like you're the most interesting man in Bitcoin. But you've studied Bitcoin to a certain point where you've come up with these three things. Now, why do you think that it's Bitcoin and Bitcoin only and it's the most valuable and greatest invention in monetary's history here?
Well, let's think about that for a minute. Okay, I'll tell you how to picture this then. Let's zoom out, all right? Let's just zoom the hell out here. You know, we've been walking around on this earth, hominids, you know, Homo sapiens, for about 300,000 years. And that entire time, we've been out there chasing animals in close combat, getting the crap kicked out of us. 13,000 years ago, the last ice age ended, Pleistocene. And when it did, within probably 2,000 years, all around the planet, and often not in adjacent areas, we started to develop into farmers. And immediately, as soon as we did as a species, you know, we could have like 2 to 3 more kids than those poor hunter-gatherers that were still out there chasing. And, you know, they really had saber-toothed tigers. That's not like something out of a movie. There really were woolly mammoths, and people were doing close-in combat with these things. You know, some of the bone breaks in Neanderthals and Homo sapiens are pretty ugly. It's like a rodeo contestant. So, and as soon as that happened, so for 10,000 years, as we settled and we went from clans to tribes, to tribal nations, to regions, to city states, to nation states, and to empires. That entire period, we have been searching for money. You can look at the clay lined pits in Mesopotamia, 3500 BC. They've got grain that they're harvesting, they're storing it down there, and they want to be able to somehow trade in these goods. So we've been looking for money, and we've used every damn thing you can imagine on this planet for money, from salt to leather to, you know, beads, everything you can imagine. And eventually, as a human race, we settled upon metals, bimetallic, either silver or gold, and usually it default was gold. But this world that we live in now will never function, no matter how good gold is as a sound, hard money. And I'm not a gold hater. You know, I've had gold in the past. I mean, you know, again, if you look at my age, you can tell I probably grew up looking for sound money, hard money back in the 70s, 80s. My mom and dad, they ended up getting gold. They held it in the house, you know, in a secure location. And I started doing the same thing. And so I don't have anything against gold. It's just that gold is never going to function in this world that you and I right now, where we're sitting here. And in the next 3 years with AI, it's going to become more and more apparent that we have to have a digital money. And that money is Bitcoin. Look at what makes money. What makes money? It has to be portable, fungible, divisible, durable, verifiable, scarce, resistant to seizure. What does that? What, you know, gold runs, or Bitcoin runs circles around gold in every one of those categories. It can't even hold it. It is the wave of the future. And these AI agents soon, you know, I don't know if you saw the one the other day, it actually opened up its own website. This AI agent went and opened up and made its own website, bought the, you know, the name, and the next thing it's ready to go. Well, they're going to all be trading, and they're going to be on Bitcoin or, you know, some derivative to it. I won't say it's necessarily Bitcoin, but it's going to be something hopefully on the Bitcoin base layer. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, and I think that that's definitely going to happen here pretty soon. But you mentioned something interesting about gold, right? You know, when you know you were growing up, your parents and all that, you were on the gold standard for, you know, a little bit of time until they took it away, you know, 50 some odd years ago. And then now we're seeing this Bitcoin revolution. Do you think that we'll see Bitcoin overtake gold as, you know, the true store of value, especially with what we're potentially seeing here at Fort Knox, where they're questioning whether or not the gold's even there.
Absolutely. There is no doubt in my mind whatsoever that Bitcoin is going to overcome gold in market cap. There's no doubt of it. You know, we're right now they've had a pretty good run. They're probably about 19 trillion on their market cap. But, you know, just look at all these other assets out there. You know, you've got $300 billion in fixed income, got another $330 billion in real estate, $115 trillion in equities, and all these things I'm naming to you. And if you look at art and collectibles, that's about $18 trillion too, same as gold. So all these things I'm mentioning to you, you know, what is the, again, if we zoom out, why is all that money in there? What is that money chasing? That money is looking for something, either yield, but really what it wants to do is it wants to preserve its wealth. And, you know, that's another thing. When you get to a place where I am in life, that's a really big concern for me. I want to preserve my wealth. I'm not growing wealth anymore. You know, I figured out Bitcoin a while ago. And when I did, I just, you know, Bitcoin's the royal flush. So again, I just took my hands, I shoved the pile in there, and I'm all in on Bitcoin. So absolutely, it's going to overtake gold. And why wouldn't it? You just heard what I said as far as what makes good sound money. Name one of those things that gold can do. You know, that idiot Schiff the other day was talking about, I think it was a conversation with Breedlove, they were having a debate, and he said, well, you know, gold is divisible. You can melt it down and do all this. And I thought, what an idiot. Do you know it takes 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit to melt the damn thing? And then, you know, you've got to have an induced plasma spectrometer if you're going to start dealing with gold. So you got one of those in your basement, do you? You know, the thing's like $50,000, Brandon. So, and for a nation state, they're like $500 to $1 million for one of these spectrometers. And that's just one thing. You know, look at everything. It's the portability. You know, what are you going to do? I can, you know, I've gotten my Bitcoin in a lot of different buckets. I don't keep it at home anymore because it's just getting too crazy. But I've got it in all these buckets. Well, I want to have the optionality that I can stick that thing on a hardware wallet. And I have a hardware wallet. I know the 12 words. You know what? I can cross a border if people piss me off. You know, they can strip search me. They can anal probe me. They can do whatever they want. And when I'm done, I can just turn around. I just go like this to you. And I don't really care. I've got all my wealth still with me. You know, what are you going to do with gold? You know, shove it up again somewhere where the sun doesn't shine. Or how, you know, people are always getting caught with the thing, trying to smuggle it out. And what's the first thing that a country does when it gets in trouble? Use capital controls and laws prohibiting you removing wealth from a country. You know, I know that's a long-winded, it sounds like a rant, but the bottom line is, I don't know why there's anybody in the world that doesn't understand that Bitcoin within the next, I don't know how long, maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's 3 years, I don't know, maybe it's 5 years, but it will overtake it. And you know, right now, that market cap would put Bitcoin at $1 million a coin, 1 million.
So do you see us getting there sooner rather than later? I know you said 2 to 3 to 5 years, but do you think that it's going to happen that quickly? Maybe even this cycle, because I mean, with the true scarcity of Bitcoin and the amount of money that is piling into Bitcoin, it seems like on a daily basis, I know we're crashing here to 85,000 or something like that, but I could definitely see a world where we're seeing that, yeah, potentially this year. Do you see the same thing?
Well, when I say overtake, you know, I'm not talking about gold going to zero or going even down, losing a lot of market cap. I actually think that gold will probably maintain a pretty healthy market cap as it continues forward. I just think Bitcoin's going to end up overtaking it because it's superior in every way. Every one of those buckets that I just told you about, all those big buckets of trillions of dollars, I am absolutely convinced that Bitcoin's going to end up taking market cap from every one of those. So what I'm really talking about is not so much gold collapsing. I just think that Bitcoin is on a path that is going to water people's eyes. And, you know, talking about the price of Bitcoin over like whatever, you know, 6 months ago, I used to say I was pretty convinced from the models that I follow that we'd see like 225, maybe 285 on this next cycle through 25. You know, I honestly, today, after everything that's happened, including the election, the ETFs, everything, I have no idea where Bitcoin's going next year or this year. I have no idea. I am clueless. And you know, I'm pretty close with Samson Mao. And if he were in the studio back there looking at, hey, you know that painting behind me there? You see it behind my shoulder?
Yeah.
You know that painting's mining Bitcoin right now while we're talking.
That's electric.
It's got a Bitcoin miner, a BitX buried in the bottom of that painting. You can see it glowing. I've got it on flashing there right now. I want you to know something. If we win a block right now, this podcast is over, bud. I'm definitely gonna have a beer, but another beer. But anyway, what I was gonna say is, I have no idea where this thing's going. If he were in there and he was looking at the painting, he said, you know, Jethro, or he said, I'm certain that this thing's gonna go to a million a coin, and I don't know why you don't believe it. I just kind of look at him and say, yeah, it could. I could see it. I mean, there's nothing that I think is. I don't think anybody can predict that what's going to come over this next year, maybe 2 years. Do you have any idea?
To be honest, I have no idea, right? I mean, with everything going on. But one thing I do know is that we're going to see adoption rapidly increase, and it's going at a rate that I never thought or predicted here. So in your time studying Bitcoin, what did you think that there was ever a possibility that we're having the potential of sovereign wealth funds? I mean, I know we've had the ETFs for about a year now, but we have billions of dollars flowing into those ETFs on a daily basis. And, you know, seemingly everybody has to have some sort of Bitcoin strategy now. Did you see this coming? And where do you think we are yet? Do you think we're at, you know, increasing adoption? Or do you think that we're starting to see something that, you know, we're starting to be at the gradually, but we haven't quite hit that suddenly just yet?
Yeah, I'll tell you something. Last cycle, I was just buried in the story of 100K Bitcoin. That was my outlook. I couldn't get past, you know, and I was certain. Here's another reason not to listen to me. You know, I was completely wrong in that cycle. I mean, I thought it was going to 100K for certain. And I do think, you know, if you look back on that last cycle in 22, I honestly think that the reason why we didn't get there was because of the GBTC. For those that are new to Bitcoin, it's a Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. And it went negative. If you remember that, it used to be a premium and then it went negative. And that caused a lot of stress in the market, tremendous amount of stress. And then followed by the China mining ban, the choke point 2.0, which I didn't even really understand the strength of that in the last cycle. All these things, I think, cut short that cycle. And if you look on the charts, I think you can almost see that it didn't really go where I thought it would. But, you know, in this cycle, again, I just, you know, I look at the adoption. For instance, did you just look, I don't know if you saw the latest report, it came out yesterday, maybe the day before, it was from River. Did you see that really in-depth report on adoption?
Yeah, and, sure. Let's dive into it, though. What was the report? Yeah, what did you see there?
Well, I don't know if it surprised you, but some of their figures really surprised me, because when I was done reading the report, it's pretty lengthy, and I highly recommend, if people haven't had a chance to look at it, it's really worth your time to do so. But one of the takes that I got from that is, it seemed to me that we were way much earlier than what I had expected as far as adoption, wallets. And you know, what's kind of funny is it backed up by that same thesis is something I read just recently about, it wasn't River. I think it was Fidelity's Lightning Network, talking about the Lightning Network. And also, you know, some things I've read from Van Eck reports and stuff. I think we are earlier than what even I was suspecting. I thought we were probably like 1999 on the internet as far as adoption rate, maybe like 6% or something like that. And now I'm not even sure we're there. So what does that really tell you? You know, if you look at an S curve, you know, there's a chasm there about 14 to 16% that you have to get across before things really take off. That doesn't mean that I'm worried that Bitcoin's going to fail. Like some S curves, you know, just fall off. They never get into the widely adopted phase. I have no fears about that all anymore. Bitcoin is not going to fail. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, talking about the China mining ban, I think for me, that was my last mental hurdle. After that, I thought, you know, we're on our way. Nothing's going to stop it. So what does that mean? You know, just look at the ETFs and try to figure this out for a minute, just from facts. Speaking of VanEck, they just released a report about 6 weeks ago, and they estimated that 80% of all the purchases that are going on right now on the ETFs are from retail or high net worth individuals, not institutions. And plus, if you saw the 13F filings that came out recently for corporations, the amount of adoption, not volume, there's a lot, volume's increasing, more and more institutions are adopting Bitcoin. Absolutely. You can see it. The thing is that they are so small, their allocations. You know, we're talking under 1% easily. It's like they're taking just their tiniest little toe, like they're scared to death, you know, and they're just taking their little toe and they're just sticking it in the pool and going, you know, is that hot or is it cold? Am I going to get in this damn thing? And so we haven't even seen that yet. I think that this next year could be just explosive in adoption. And you already mentioned it, you know, God help us if we see a sovereign state go all in on Bitcoin. Not that they aren't now. I actually think that there are nations that are stacking. But what I'm trying to say is somebody comes out, like not a Bhutan, but, you know, a major country, and they're just stacking Bitcoin. It's going to be a come to Jesus moment for a lot of people.
What nations do you think are stacking here?
I think the UAE is stacking. I think Russia's stacking. You know, did you see Russia's finance minister? First time I've ever seen this ever on television. And it was on Christmas Day 2024 last year. He came out right there on TV and said that Russia is using Bitcoin for international trade settlement. That's an eye-watering moment there. So there's no doubt. I mean, why wouldn't they? They've got like 14% of the hash rate. So does China. And, you know, hash rate's going to be where this is going, because anybody can, you know, right now, anybody can still buy Bitcoin. But, you know, at some point, what's going to become critical is to be able to get on that blockchain. That's going to be that's a war, and that's coming.
Do you think that this is going to be basically the start of maybe the hash wars that Max Keiser describes, or do you think it's maybe the race to buy as much Bitcoin to put it on your strategic reserves before the U.S. implements it? Like, how do you see this nation state, I guess, almost like Bitcoin conflict here play out?
Yeah, that's probably a good way to describe it, conflict. You know, the funny thing is, though, when you look around, Brandon, and you look at the governments and you know, how like Jan 3's work with governments and trying to get them on board, boy, there's a lot of resistance, and then there's a lot of turnover in people, and it just puts, you know, the adoption of Bitcoin, that buying of Bitcoin, stacking it onto a sovereign wealth fund or insider reserve, that's a tough hurdle for some countries. And the hash war that we're talking about, I do believe that's coming. But I mean, if these countries still can't even get a handle on what Bitcoin is and how important it is, you know, I think that's a ways off. But when it comes, I mean, that's going to be an eye-opening experience, especially for plebs. You know, if you don't have good control of your Bitcoin, you don't understand what consolidation is of UTXOs. You know, right now, I think, what was it, one fee byte, one sat or something per fee byte? I mean, the fees right now on chain are ridiculous. So, you know, I strongly encourage people to understand how to consolidate UTXOs. If you're doing what I said and you're trying to get that 1/10 of a Bitcoin, you know, think about that. Maybe it's something to consider someday in the future about consolidating it into whatever you think is safe.
The best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and Canada is the Bitcoin Well. You can go to thebitcoinwell.com/greencandle and sign up today, and they will give you wishing well tokens. They are one of the only exchanges in the United States that will give you free sats, every time you buy Bitcoin. You have a chance to win 1 million sats every time you buy. You get Wishing Well token. You flip the coin down the Wishing Well, and you have the chance to win 1 million sats. You heard me here, folks. 1 million sats. And on top of that, they have the absolute best over-the-counter service where you can make purchases over $50,000, and they will walk you through the whole thing. They have the best rates in the United States and in Canada, and on top of that, they have the best white glove service where they will take you through those giant purchases just so you feel comfortable. You'll get it in cold storage, and it's strictly non-custodial. They are saying, we want you to experience the true power of Bitcoin, and that's self-custody. So go to the well, sign up, bitcoinwell.com/greencandle today. Enough for me, back to the show.
Yeah, and I mean, I 100% agree with you. You need to get that strategy in place. But George, you've had a very interesting life with everything lined out here, right? So I don't know if you want to go through a little bit of your experience and background and all that, but what kind of drew you towards Bitcoin, and what was almost that aha moment, the reason why it clicked? Was it because it was similar to gold, which was something that you were looking for? Or was it the, you know, maybe the decentralization? What kind of drew you to there with your vast experience that you've got?
Have you ever noticed how, like, if you look around in the Bitcoin community, like you go to the meetups or you go to one of the conventions, for me, I don't know if it's true for you, but I'm always blown away by the people. You know, I really do feel like the village idiot sometimes when I'm talking to these people. I've never met brighter, sharper, more ethical, moral people than I've met in the Bitcoin community. And, you know, when you start to see these people and they're younger and they're working on a better future, you know, it gets you excited. I like to learn. I've always loved to learn. And yeah, I've had a lot of different jobs. I mean, I mentioned working underground, and I used to work in the oil fields too, and I was a cop and stuff. But you know, they weren't jobs that challenged you. I mean, in fact, I'd have to say my whole life I've just been kind of a working stiff. You know, even when I was flying in the Navy, well, that was not a 9-to-5 job. But when I got hired by Delta, you know, I've flown all over the world. I was a captain with Delta, and I mean, that was work. You know, you show up on time, you're prepared, you work. But it's almost like a working stiff. And when you see that, you know, when you look at the Bitcoin and you start to study it, I've never studied anything like that before. No matter, you know, conventional stuff, equities, commodities, I never saw anything like Bitcoin. So, I mean, I started getting hooked on it as soon as I started studying it. And Lynn Alden's articles that she wrote kind of got me started down that rabbit hole. Years ago, she wrote one, and another one a little more recent, like in 2020. And you know, the funny thing is that when you go down that rabbit hole, you never come back. There's no opening down there. There's no revelation. You don't go to see King Tut's tomb down there and then go, wow, I get it. It's like it's a never-ending journey down there in that rabbit hole. And it just, there's a million passages. You know, when I used to work underground, we would go down deep. I mean, really deep. Sometimes I was down almost 2 miles down in the earth. And you had all these, we call them drifts, but you would call them tunnels. And they would go off in all these different directions. And, you know, I would get lost down there sometimes, you know. I almost felt like I really did need breadcrumbs. And that's what it reminds me sometimes. I'm down there studying, like even today I was studying and stuff. And why would I do that? You know, first off, I'm not trading and I'm done buying. I don't have any money to buy. And you know, there are people out there right now in this latest dip. I mean, it's just cracking me up. You know, there are people that are like panicking over it. I think it's like, what are we, maybe a 25% dip? You know, the most that we've had on this last cycle is like, I think it went to 30. It might have had a little wick that went down to 30 something. And I'm thinking, geez, guys, you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to take a spoonful of cement and harden up, because you haven't seen anything yet for the normal volatility that you get in Bitcoin.
No, and I think, you know, we're still going to have these dips, even with the amount of money that's coming in. But, you know, with the fixed amount, I think that it is exceptionally, you know, probably makes Bitcoin the greatest invention of our time here. Do you think that the human mind can really, I guess, conceptualize the amount of scarcity that Bitcoin has, or just the fixed scarcity? Because it seems like we've never had anything like it, right? I mean, gold, yeah, it's scarce to a certain point, but then we had El Salvador, you know, magically find, you know, billions of dollars worth of gold that was dug up maybe like a few months ago. And then we have all these stories, you know, Elon Musk allegedly could mine gold off of asteroids and crazy things like that. So, you know, do you think we've ever had anything, I guess, as scarce as Bitcoin?
No, it is a 0-to-1 event. I mean, this is a once in species thing. You know, as I said, 10,000 years, we've been trying to figure this out. Never had anything like this. You know, there's 200,000 tons of gold above ground right now. And every year they're mining, well, right now they're mining about 3,000 tons a year. So their stock to flow is about 66. That's about a 1.5% inflation rate. And, you know, that's the best we could ever do. And the funny thing is, if you look at gold, you'll see over the years, over the centuries, that they get better and better at taking it out of the ground. They get better and better at finding it every year. And, you know, there's been like 5 major gold rushes in this country: North Carolina, Georgia, Nevada, California, and Alaska. And there's no reason there won't be another one next year. You know, you get gold up to $4,000, you know, for an ounce of gold, you're going to see gold coming out at a lot of places. And Bitcoin, I don't think it's so difficult to get a handle on what you just said. I'm not even sure I really have a handle on what that means, to have a fixed finite supply. You know, in the year 2034 at 99% mined, that means from that point forward, we're going to be losing as much Bitcoin probably every year as we produce. So there's not going to be any more. You've got, you know, what's that give you? It gives you like 9 years to, you know, get off your ass and get as much as you can. So I don't think people do understand it. I don't know if you have any ideas, but I'm not sure how to get them to figure that out.
Well, what do you think happens when everybody does start to figure that out? Are we going to see just a wave of FOMO that has never been seen on this planet before? Or how do you see that when people actually start to figure out Bitcoin?
See, that's the thing. That is the thing, because, you know, I said I follow models, but those models aren't going to mean jack shit in the future if that happens. I mean, what do models do? You know, it doesn't matter what models I follow. I look at a lot of models, and guess what? They're all based on the past predicting the future. Okay, there's some way to try to see a future. Well, guess what? You know, you're building a model on top of the most volatile asset we've ever seen, other than maybe gold in the Weimar Republic. So you've got all this volatility, and how much history do you have to build a model on? You got maybe like 3 valid cycles that I think that you could use. 3. You know, if you told a statistician that I'm going to build a model on 3 cycles in the most volatile asset on planet Earth, I mean, you just get laughed on, you know, you'd be laughed out of the office. And so what does happen when, you know, it's going to be set the dial to 11, cook noodles, and come to Jesus moment. And you know, we're not going to go back to some of these things. You know, I mean, I got Bitcoin when it went down to 17,000. You think I'm ever going to get that shot again? You think I'll ever have that chance?
Unfortunately, I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. So with that, you know, I mean, it seems like everybody is going to potentially, I guess, like figure it out there. So you said you follow models, right? A big one that's going around now is the power law and everything like that. Now, Jeff Booth famously says, and he said it a few times on this show as well, where you can't price a new system in the old system. So do you think that there's a point where all of these models seemingly break, and that point is coming soon?
Oh man,
I'm putting you on the spot here, George.
You are. Yeah, you are putting me on the spot. So you don't have poop emojis on this channel, do you? I mean, people aren't going to throw poop on me.
Well, no, you know, no, not necessarily.
Jeff Booth is a smart guy, okay? I mean, and you know, I often say I'm like an 80 IQ pleb. I am a working guy, and the only thing I know is from what I study. So I just study all the time. And, you know, I love Jeff's book, and I do understand what he's saying. But at the same time, I don't live the life that Jeff does as far as how I approach Bitcoin. For one thing, I'm not going to give up my Bitcoin. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, there are a lot of people that are going to be pissy because they think you should be trading it, or no, they think you should be using it in a circular economy. And I have. I mean, you know, I'm sure like me, you've probably got a fill and spend wallet. You know, I just put some fiat cuck bucks, turn them into Bitcoin, and then I pay somebody. I don't mind doing that. I love doing it. I went down to El Salvador and spent a bunch of money. I don't mind doing that. I don't mind helping people. Sometimes I just send sats to people to, you know, just to help them out or something. And that's not it. But, you know, the Bitcoin that I've been working my ass off on getting here, and for you people that are going through this cycle now, maybe for the first time, you'll understand what I'm talking. You get through one of these cycles, and if you still have your Bitcoin intact, it's going to be pretty precious to you. You're going to be sitting there going, you know what? Like me, I've got it in a fist. Nobody's getting that Bitcoin. And, you know, I think there'll be a world coming forward where, you know, we'll be not so much on a Bitcoin standard. I just think that Bitcoin will be like the base layer to good money. It'll be maybe one of many things. I don't know if we're going to have an SDR, you know, a special drawings right basket, or like the Bancor that they were originally talking about at Bretton Woods. I don't know. I do think that the faster that we can get Bitcoin into that role, the better our world is going to be. Because, you know, this fiat world just sucks. I mean, it just sucks. You know, being a former military guy, and I just hate to see what's going on in the world right now. I never voted for them to be dropping all these bombs all over the damn place or invading countries, or, you know, that's not what I want in life. And I don't know how to get away from that unless you can get onto a sound hard money. And I don't know if that really answers your question though.
No, I mean, I think I want to dive into more of that, right? You said you didn't vote for these wars and other things like that, but do you think that, you know, the potential of Trump coming in and, you know, the SBR and all these talks, maybe potentially putting Bitcoin in the sovereign wealth fund, all these different things, do you think that there's a possibility we get to potentially a Bitcoin standard, or maybe the dollar backed by Bitcoin in some way, shape, or form?
Well, there's three things that we'll probably discuss. There's going to be three things that we're going to throw out here, and people got to understand each one of them's different. You mentioned one of them already. You said the, the sovereign wealth fund. That's one. The strategic Bitcoin reserve. That's another one. And then, as mentioned in the Trump executive order, we're going to have a digital asset stockpile that they're looking at. Every one of those things is different. The least important in my mind, because of the executive order and the way it was worded, is now the digital asset stockpile. You know, if they had committed to an inventory and almost a seizure, if you will, of the existing Bitcoin that the government holds, using it as a base, and they clearly stated, we are going to establish this stockpile and it's going to be Bitcoin and Bitcoin only, you know, not a bunch of shit coins in it. If they had done that, that's different. So I don't want to concentrate on that too much, because quite frankly, I don't think it's went the way I wanted to. But the other thing is, I think it can be overturned in a heartbeat. I just think it's meaningless right now. So let's talk about the sovereign wealth fund, because that's not the same case. If you remember when they announced that, or they're talking about it, it was in the White House. I mean, President Trump's sitting there at the desk. He's got Howard Lutnick on one side. He's got, you know, Scott Bessent on the other side, and it's going to fall into Howard Lutnick's, his little basket, I guess, to take care of. And you know what? Howard Lutnick is a Bitcoin bull, man. That guy is a, Do you know, I don't know if you saw this. He just said that he's got like hundreds of millions of dollars of Bitcoin himself. And then he said kind of jokingly, and as soon it's going to be billions. And you know, his firm that he resigned as CEO, but his sons now run that, Cantor Fitzgerald. So I assume that they're aligned with his same viewpoint, which is, you know, they're big Bitcoin bulls. And they have already said they want to get into the Bitcoin lending space. They want to start developing products that we can use for lending. Plus their tethers, you know, they're holding assets for Tether. Now, why am I saying all this stuff? Because, well, let's cover the last item here. Let's cover the SBR, okay? Because a lot of people are pissed about this. Cynthia Lummis's bill, it's bill 4912, doesn't have any sponsors on it right now. And she recently did a follow-up interview with somebody. And I had not heard her say this before, but she said, basically, there's a lot of resistance in Congress because although people are interested in the Bitcoin reserve, they don't understand Bitcoin and they want more teaching. They want to learn more about it. So she was just saying, I've got a lot of work to do in front of me. And then she said, here's our first goal. Our first goal is, and it ties into what we're talking about with the dollar, treasuries, all this shit, is the first thing we want to do is to establish the regulatory framework for stablecoins. And then two, the same for digital assets. And then three, the strategic Bitcoin reserve. So that first hearing that they had yesterday, her new subcommittee, digital assets, that she is the chair of, drew a lot of flack because, you know, they had speakers there and they were talking about everything except just Bitcoin. And it was pissing off a lot of Bitcoiners. I don't know what to say to that. I'm not even sure how to respond to that right now. And I don't want to go there. Here's what I want to go down. So we've talked about these three things, but you mentioned how would Bitcoin, where's Bitcoin going to go in the future? And again, I don't really know how it's going to play out, but I'm going to tell you something. Do you know a USDT Tether and the CEO, Paolo Ardoña, they now hold over $100 billion of US treasuries. They have more treasuries than UAE. They hold more treasuries in the world than Germany. They grew 50% in 12 months. And if they continue, next year they could be in the top five or six, half a dozen, of the countries in the world holding US treasuries. They are becoming a sinkhole for this, the US dollar, and maybe a salvation for it too. But if we start talking about Tether, again, we're going to get poopy emojis, but then also, you know, and I get it because it's a good and a bad story, and it could come out really ugly for Bitcoin. Again, that's kind of a rant or a long-winded answer, but I'm hopeful about the sovereign wealth fund. I'm less hopeful now about the strategic Bitcoin reserve because it seems to me like there's a lot of work in front of us. And hey, if you're a Bitcoiner and you're listening to this, you know, get off your ass. I have already written both my senators. I've written my House rep about that SBR, and I want it. And I told them I want it, and I want it Bitcoin, Bitcoin only. And you need to do the same and to get some traction going.
Well, George, you mentioned a lot there, but one thing that you did mention, and I love the rants, man, so don't be afraid to go for it and let it rip, but you mentioned Cantor Fitzgerald, right? So Howard Lutnick, who's now going to own there. Now, I don't know if you know this, but the number one holding of Cantor Fitzgerald is MicroStrategy.
I know.
So the GigaChad, or I guess now it's Strategy B, right? The GigaChad himself, Michael Saylor, has been dipping his toes in, it seems like, everywhere. And there's a lot of things, a lot of hubbub about Strategy now, or formerly known as MicroStrategy. So what's your viewpoint on Michael Saylor and MicroStrategy? I'll leave it a little broad for you.
Yeah, Cantor Fitzgerald. This is unheard of. They've got 40% of their holdings in one company, MicroStrategy, now called Strategy. That's unheard of. So when I say they're like a Bitcoin bull and Howard Lutnick, I mean, I know what I'm talking about here because that's not normal behavior. So, and I should tell everybody before we start this conversation, I am a big holder of MicroStrategy. The Wall Street Journal interviewed me, must have been a couple months ago, about just this thing. And I didn't start out that way. It just, I'm telling you, the thing is just blown up. And I don't know if you're like me. If I have something like that, I don't rebalance it, especially if, I only have Bitcoin and this Bitcoin proxy. So I'm not going to rebalance it. I just let this thing sit there and grow. And,
But so George, I did hear an interview of you where you said you bought MicroStrategy a while ago and you didn't know what you held at one point in time. And you did. So I have to call you out on this a little bit. I did a little research here. All right. So tell us a little bit about that story and what happened and kind of what you learned throughout of it.
Well, that's a good story because you know what? That could help a lot of people here. So especially like, let's just say you were buying Bitcoin and it was going through 90 some, it went up to 108K. Well, when I originally bought MicroStrategy, it was right after they had announced this program of whatever they were going to do. You know, they were just going to buy Bitcoin. And they didn't really know what they were doing at the time. I mean, they were just using the treasury operation or, you know, their actual income from the enterprise software business. So, I mean, they were making inroads, but they really hadn't started the nonstop buying of Bitcoin, although they were aggressively doing it. Well, you know, the damn thing went, I bought some and it just kept going up and up and up. And volatility works both ways. And I got shaken out. I mean, it kept going up and I thought, this can't be right. And so I sold all of it. And what an idiot. And sure enough, you know, from that time, it's gone up like 2,500% if I'd have just held on to the damn thing. But volatility is that way. You know, the good part of that story is, after I sold it and I couldn't figure out why I did that, I just started studying it, man. I studied my ass off. And then must be 14 months now, maybe 15 months ago, I finally just had this revelation. And I was talking to a buddy of myself. It was Larry Lepard. He and I were talking. And I just said, I know what he's going to do. You know, he's not sitting on the damn Bitcoin to hatch it like an egg. He's going to do something with it. And I think he's going to end up being the world's largest Bitcoin bank. And as soon as I figured that out, I just bought a chunk of it and I've been sitting there ever since. Now I'm not selling it now though.
No, I like to hear that, but I do have a question for you here and it's maybe a little tinfoil hatty, but we've got Mark Zuckerberg is potentially the only other CEO that could be a bigger Bitcoin holder than Michael Saylor. And he could be bigger than Michael Saylor. Now, let me explain, because he currently has a larger market cap, obviously, with Meta than Strategy does. And he is the only CEO who has more voting power, similar to what Michael Saylor did when he implemented this strategy, where if Mark Zuckerberg wanted to put Bitcoin on the Meta's balance sheet, he could do that. Now, do you think that that's absolutely crazy, or anybody else would potentially catch Michael Saylor and these billionaires will start to get competitive and then we could see billionaire FOMO start to take off?
That's not stupid at all. And it's definitely possible. I mean, if Mark Zuckerberg would get off his damn skateboard or whatever the hell he's doing there, or is, I don't know what he's doing, skiing around on the lake or something. I'm serious. I mean, if he started studying it, really understanding what he's doing, I mean, he'd be in a heartbeat. He's got 62% of the voting power of that company, and they've got $40 billion. You know, another company that could do that, Michael Dell has got about the same amount of voting power, but they don't have as much money. I mean, I think the last time I checked, maybe it was $4 billion or something. And then, of course, we've been watching Ryan Cohen, the GameStop, and wondering where that's going. There are a lot of people that could get into this in a big way. But the problem is that they'll never catch MicroStrategy. He's already left. He's gone. He's on his way to a black hole. I mean, if you're familiar with a black hole, you get to this, the event horizon, everything that goes inside the event horizon, you never see it again. An observer on the outside never sees it. And he's headed there. He's going to the singularity. And when he gets to at some point when he's not able to do this convertible debt or ATM issuance, and he's got as much as he wants. And, you know, there was a Bernstein, the private wealth fund, just said that they think he's going to get 1 million Bitcoin. That's his goal. And I believe they're probably right. And no one's going to catch him. It's impossible. And not only that, nobody can do what he's doing. It doesn't matter. Zuckerberg could spend every dime he has. He could spend $40 billion and it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference, because what does he have on his balance sheet? It's not just Bitcoin. Michael Saylor, his company is unique. I mean, it has one item on it. And because of that, it takes that, its MicroStrategy is selling volatility, and they're putting it in buckets. And, you know, depending upon who you are, here, have some of this bucket, have some of this. The convertible debt's one bucket. And there are a lot of people that want that debt, man. That is the best performing bond out anywhere on the market. It set records. And, you know, there are many companies that are buying it, and then they short it immediately. They're buying that. It's a weird instrument, those convertible debts. Very unusual. It starts out as a debt instrument, a bond, if you will, but then it can convert into equity as it progresses in its lifespan. And they're buying that, then they're shorting on the other side. They're basically like arbitraging the volatility on either side. They can make a lot of money. And those things, their average return, the last time I looked at it, was like 70 or 80% for all of them blended together. That's unheard of. And the last one he got was 0% interest. Zero. The one before that was zero. Now, he did have to, he actually came down a little on the premium. They shopped these out. And, you know, the volatility on MicroStrategy has been decreasing with all that ATM issuance. So he didn't get as good a premium on it, but still it's unheard of. And I mean, nobody's going to catch him. A lot of people may mirror his philosophy. They might try to do different, you know, techniques that he uses, but nobody's going to catch him. He's unique.
Do you think Michael Saylor is going to be the richest man on the planet very soon?
If he's undoubtedly not already? Undoubtedly, he will be. You can bookmark that. And somebody, again, you can call me an idiot, but, you know, maybe in the years in the future, you know, if he does something stupid. But no, I do. I think he'll be the richest man on Earth.
Now, do you think that it's almost like every one of the plebs is almost seemingly pumping his bags because we're all buying MicroStrategy, which is allowing him to buy more and more Bitcoin? So we're unable to buy all this Bitcoin because Saylor's just out here scooping it all up.
Well, you know, I'm not buying any more MicroStrategy. And you know, let's be clear. I mean, if something happened and I got in a place where I had to sell something, I mean, you know, Saylor's stock would go out the window so fast, it, you know, make your head spin. I'd sell that crap so fast and I'd keep my Bitcoin. But
okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's scored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
You know, I don't know if you listen, not the last earnings call, but the one before in October. I've never listened to an earnings call like that before. And, you know, he said, we are on this journey together. And I listened to my shareholders and I listened to, another thing is he's getting really good relationships built with all these QIBs, qualified institutional buyers, the ones that are buying up his debt. He's getting a good relationship that he's building over time with them. And I've never followed a CEO, although he's not now, he's not the CEO, but I've never followed anybody that I actually, I guess, I hate saying the word trust. I believe in what he's saying to me when he says we are going to buy Bitcoin, Bitcoin only. We are going to use intelligent leverage. Every time we buy Bitcoin, we are going to increase the amount of Bitcoin you, George, have per share. And so far, he's been true to his word. And he says, we're not going to buy when it doesn't make sense. And he's been true to his word. He says, we are going to continue to buy indefinitely. He's been true to his word. So I have no complaints. I'm on the ship with him. You know, in my mind, he's the captain. He's taken us to a far shore that we've never been to before. And I can prove that because we've never seen this type of, we've never seen these types of financial operations in this market. It's groundbreaking. I mean, they'll write books about this someday. So, you know, and when he turns around, he says, you know, we're burning the boats. All we do is Bitcoin. We're not doing anything else, nothing else. This is it. I'm there for it. So I'm having fun. I'm watching this unfold, and you mark my words. That is where he's going, though. He's going to be the world's biggest Bitcoin bank.
Hey, and I believe you. And I think, you know, historians are currently documenting the greatness that Michael Saylor is putting out there. But you said something interesting. You said, you know, he's going to go until buying Bitcoin until it doesn't make sense. I mean, with everything laying out here, when does buying Bitcoin not make sense, George?
Well, this convertible debt market at some point will have a cap to it. And part of it will have to do with the price of Bitcoin. What I'm talking about is as Bitcoin becomes more and more hyper Bitcoinization and gets up into the multiple millions, many of the things that we see happening now are not going to work in the future. Those, you know, even the power law, even though that's based on some really interesting concepts. And I think people give, I don't think they lend enough credence to it. The more you study it, you understand there's a basis behind the reasoning and the math. But I don't want to get into that other than to say that model breaks too during that at some point. And Giovanni will tell you his model won't work at that point in hyper Bitcoinization. So, and you know, that model, that the market that he's using right now for that debt, it's about $276 billion. He just said recently he thinks it's $340 billion, and they're tapping just a small amount of it. It's so profitable that, you know, I think it's going to get it will continue for a long time. But at some point, you know, he mentioned 10 years on one of the podcasts with Safe. But at some point, banks are going to be using Bitcoin as their base layer for their lending programs for tokens. And this is even discussed by Hal Finney in Bitcoin Talk Forum years ago. Yeah, I mean, and that's a tricky issue. A lot of people are going to be, there'd be more poop emojis if I talk about Bitcoin yield. I'm not going to go down that road unless you want to, and then I will.
No, I mean, we don't have to talk about the Bitcoin yield or anything along those lines. I was just curious when you thought at what point, if there was any, but I get what you're saying now. It's more about the convertible debt market and less about the timing of buying Bitcoin. It's like, how much money can you obtain here? And it seems like the way that Bitcoin's going, the amount of Bitcoin that MicroStrategy or Strategy now, I'll get corrected in the comments, now that Strategy holds, seemingly, I don't see any end to it, to be honest with you. So I was just curious if you saw an end to it. I mean, with everything that's going up, I think the exponential growth of Bitcoin will just allow him to theoretically pay off this debt as long as he'd like. But, you know, it seems like the banks at this point are just letting Michael Saylor run rampant and buy all our Bitcoin at this point.
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, it's a good point because it could go on. And, you know, you have to remember too, a lot of people get this wrong. They think that MicroStrategy is a holding company for Bitcoin, and that's, or a closed end trust or some other nonsense. That's not true. And all that debt that I just mentioned to you, you know, that's not even marked to market. It's not held on their books. They're converting all of it early. In fact, they just converted like four of them. And so they're just laddering it out, you know, continuing. And so, and the ATM, you know, all that stock that they've been issuing and stuff, guess what? That's not a debt instrument on their books anywhere. That's actually, they're putting capital into the company. So, you know, I don't have any concerns about that. I mean, but what you said is, I mean, it is possible, I guess, that you could just keep going and going. But, you know, at some point, I hate talking about, you know, the MOAS, mother of all supply shocks. But, you know, there's a lot of people that don't understand, especially the newer people that are just like whiny little babies about this 26% drop in stuff. I don't know what to tell you except this. Okay. Just listen up for a minute. There is a limited supply of Bitcoin. If you take out Satoshi's coins, that's like 1 million. You take out right now, the ETFs are well over 1 million. If they're right, Bernstein, and I heard somebody else discuss this, if Michael Saylor is going to end up with 1 million coins, they're going to be gone. You know, you've got 71 of the top corporations and countries that have got about 3 million of the Bitcoin. And then you've got somewhere between 2 to 4 million Bitcoin lost, okay? Lost. And right now, every single day, it seems like there's a bid under Bitcoin that's keeping it in this range when there's been tremendous sell pressure. I don't think most people realize, you know, even Bitcoiners that have been around for a while, I don't think you really see, you know, from 50K up to about 73K, we were having 40,000 coins a day from long-term holders being sold in the market. And then it went down to about 30,000. That's a lot. And then 20,000. I think right now it's maybe 10,000. Long-term holders are selling every day into this market. And yet this has got this strong bid under it. Now, I'm not sure if that's the ETFs. I assume that's a part of it. But there is going to come a time, you know, I'll bet you're like me. I mean, you probably hold that Bitcoin. Don't you hold it in a fist?
Amen. Amen to that.
So if we hold that like that, there's going to be more and more people of us like us. You know, when you've gone through one cycle, like your one tour of duty, you know, you start to become a hardened vet. You go through two tours of duty and it's like, I don't know, it takes a lot to phase you. And, you know, I just don't see how. I think at some point it's like the toothpaste is going to be out on the table. We're not going to get it back in the tube. And we're going to be in price discovery then, true price discovery. And I think that TradFi is going to have a real awakening. A lot, you know, these institutions I told you about, they're not even, you know, they're inside. We set up the perimeter. They're inside the perimeter. Their tripwires have been set. They're here. But you know what? They're so little. They're like nothing. Their allocations are nothing. Well, what about when they come in force? What about when this starts to actually take off? Where's that Bitcoin going to come from? It's not me.
Yeah, it seems like the price is going to be incumbent because of the psychopath hodlers like us here. But you brought up the MOAS, the mother of all supply shocks. Let's dive into that theory here, George. Tell us what that is and why do you think that's going to happen? Or do you think it's going to happen?
You know what? If you're interested in that, you should follow Rustin. Follow Rustin on Simply Bitcoin. Listen to a couple of his podcasts and see if he mentions MOAS. Once in a while, he'll mention that. And the thing that the problem when you start going down that rabbit hole of, you know, at some point we're not going to have any more Bitcoin to sell is that doesn't make a lot of sense in one way. And here's why. It's something called Say's Law. It's like the law of supply and demand, the fact that supply creates its own demand. When I have these discussions about Bitcoin availability and different, you know, pressures on Bitcoin, you know what I'm really talking about is the fact that you've got a buyer and a seller and they're coming together and there's always going to be Bitcoin for sale. That's not the question. You know what the real question is what price is it going to take for that transaction to occur? And that's what I'm talking about. When I say it's not that there's no supply or that supply is being manipulated, all I'm saying is that at some point, what you brought up earlier, when you talked about trying to understand finite supply, that's the discussion. And when that comes to fruition, when we're on the edge where we're setting prices on the outside of a market, you know, that edge setting, that is where we are going to see price discovery. And I think it's going to be shocking for a lot of people.
Now, when we see that, obviously all models break at that point in time, but it seems like we're kind of on the cusp of that with a lot of the, you know, things that you laid out there, right? Sailor, MicroStrategy has 500,000 coins after their most recent buy. I could see them. They've even come out and said that the strategy wants to double that holding within 2024. So that could be 1 million coins by the end of this year. And then we could see, you know, a lot of other crazy things. We could see, you know, the Metas of the world start to come onto it. Sovereign wealth funds, BlackRock has talked about. Larry Fink said that he's talked to sovereign wealth funds and they said 2-5% allocation there. You know, we have UAE potentially holding Bitcoin. I mean, it seems like all bets are off and it's happening this cycle. At least I want to put my flag on it and kind of stamp that there. Because it seems like, you know, with everything we're lining out here and all the discussions around the globe with Bitcoin, it seems like Trump is almost skyrocketed the FOMO where now everybody's like, okay, this is what everybody wanted. And it was like a president in the United States who is maybe not necessarily a Bitcoiner, but full crypto friendly, so to speak. So then it seems like all bets are off and it's happening soon. Is that, do I sound crazy or do you see it in a similar light?
Well, again, what if you were sitting in the studio and walking around, you're looking around here at the paintings, or you go back, there's a changing room there for models in the back. You go back there and you're looking around and stuff and you go, George, it's going to go, we're going to have a supply shock and it's going to go to 1 million a coin. I look at you and go, no, man, stop smoking whatever it is you're on, because it could happen. I don't know. But here's a couple of things I'm going to say. One, just picture, you know, lots of times at Bitcoiners and the people that are listening to this right now, or if you're watching this, you know, you got to remember sometimes we're all like we're like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, and we're all in a little circle and we're roasting marshmallows. And we keep talking to each other, but we're just talking back and forth across the circle. You know, normies that are outside the circle, that are whatever they're doing, they look down at that little circle of us and they're going, boy, they're nuts down there. If you went into a room with 100 people right now, just any convention or anything, you know, and you looked around and you actually started talking to people, how many people do you think actually know about Bitcoin or really have any concept of what we are discussing? You know, the idea of 21 million, it's not many. And so that's one thing I'll say. And then the other thing is, some people, they just don't understand. They don't understand what they hold. So again, at, you know, some price, you know, when it goes up to 150, or if it goes up to 225, like I said, there's going to be a lot of coins that are going to come out of long-term storage and they're going to go into Bitcoin. It's just inevitable. So, and in a way, we should be thankful for that. Every single day that we have a chance to get more people on board or have these coins change. Do you know that 51% of the coins now have changed hands above like 90,000, I think? That's a big deal. Now you've got a new cohort that are going through that first cycle, you know, and they're becoming hodlers. Many of them will stay with us here. And they've got a new price base now. This is a new era, a new epoch. And so what I'm trying to say is, and one of the reasons why I'm sitting in the studio right now talking to you is because we have a limited time left to do what we're doing. This train is going to leave the station. And you and me, and if you're out there listening, just look down in your hand. If you've got Bitcoin, you've got a ticket. You got a ticket to get on the damn train and you're actually boarding it now. We're sitting there. We're on the train. We're just relaxed. If you're like me, you're relaxed. You don't give a crap what's going on around you. You're just looking around going, hey, there's my buddy. You know, I know this person. We're all on board the train. But when you look out the window, that's the thing. On that platform, you know, there's a lot of poor bastards that, you know, not only don't have Bitcoin, but some of them, you know, I mean, they're really poor. I mean, in the sense that, you know, they don't have anything. And one of the things that bothers me so much about the discussion around Tether is because I think a lot of the pushback on Tether comes from a position of privilege. You and I are privileged. I mean, there is not a king in the 12th century that would not trade places with us today and walk down a street and get in a car. We are privileged. And not only that, you and I, both of us, we've operated many times on the base layer. Someday that won't happen. I mean, we are privileged and we can have dollars. Both of us have bank accounts. You know, all these poor sods out there that are just trying to get by and they get a dollar, you know, if they can get one damn dollar and it's in their stupid currency, wherever they are in the world, bolivars or some other crap, or the Naira, they just want to put it in something that's not as bad as what they've got. And so they want a dollar. And, you know, oftentimes the only way they can get it is Tether. And I don't want to say anything bad against these people. And I know I'm drifting off course here, so I'll stay focused. So we don't know where this is going, but we do know the train is leaving the station. And I want to try and get as many people on board as I can. And I want them to, people that are with me right now, I don't want them to get scared and jump off the train. I want them to just stay here with me and let's go on this great journey because it's going to be a beautiful place that we're going to. And, you know, you're as young as you are, you know, if you have kids, you have wife, you know what? You're creating a world for them. You are creating generational wealth and you will become legend. Someday people are going to look back on your life and you'll be sitting like me at my age and people are going to go, you know what? G-Pop, man, that guy was smart. Did you know that he, whatever. And you're going to take people to a beautiful place. So if you're listening out there, you got to get on board and understand what you hold, do your research. And if, you know, hopefully we've got time and there won't be a MOAS.
No, but I agree with you. I think that Bitcoin is inevitable in a sense, but you mentioned Tether and I want to dive into that a little bit because you said a little thing interesting about us being a little privileged, but Tether seemingly has the most profitable business model that I've ever seen. And I don't think we'll ever see anything like it again. But how important do you think Tether being ingrained with, you know, seemingly almost being one of the biggest countries in the world will be for Bitcoin? Do you think that plays a huge role, or do you think I might be over exaggerating it a bit?
I don't think you're over exaggerating at all. I just challenge any Bitcoiner out there. If you don't like where this is going, you know, use Grok, use whatever the hell you have to use, but you come up with a one page paper and then you post it on X to tell us how we're going to stop Tether. Tether's on fire. I mean, they are the most profitable. $13 billion worth of profit last year. Part of that is from Bitcoin and gold too, but even without it. And you know, those treasuries I'm telling you about, you know, they won't go out on the long end of the curve. They're all short term. They're really T-bills. They're 1 and 3 month T-bills they're buying. So imagine if you had $100 billion there, Brandon, and you're earning, you know, over $4 billion every year just to sit on your ass. And what kind of infrastructure is Tether carrying on their shoulders right now? You don't see a bunch of Tether trucks running around your neighborhood, do you? So they've got no overhead. Last I saw, they had like less than 100 employees. This is unbelievable. I think you're right. I mean, it probably is the most profitable company in the world, and definitely per person. And then they're going to build, I've heard they're going to build a 70-story headquarters in El Salvador. You know, they just moved to El Salvador. That's their official country now. And they're going to double their workforce, and 70% of it's going to be local population. I mean, that's pretty damn cool. And, you know, I'm just kind of curious. Again, I just don't know what people, I don't know what people expect they have in control. You know, Frank Corbett just put out a take piece, which is an opinion piece in Bitcoin Magazine. And he's got some good points because, you know, there's some bad, Tether's got some bad sides to it. I mean, really bad. And kind of scary going forward. I mean, it's a, you know, it's not a CBTC, but it is absolutely infiltrated with law enforcement agencies, Secret Service, FBI. You know, they're in there. They have access. And I don't know all the other agencies, and I probably never will know. And so what if Tether, you know, they say that guy, George Bodine, we heard him on a podcast. We don't like this guy, and we're, you know, seize his funds, do whatever. You know, he's got some Tether on a Aqua wallet. I love the Aqua wallet, by the way, and I'm not paid to say that. I just want you to know I love that wallet. And it lets you transfer. The reason I mentioned it, too, is you go back and forth, Tether, Bitcoin, Liquid, and Lightning. So, and it's a threat. I mean, it's a concentrated wealth, and it's going to be on the Bitcoin base chain soon. It's going to be back, I should say. You know, back in 2014, Tether tried to get onto the blockchain with Omni, I think it was, and it didn't work out very well. But this is going to work out, I think. There's a couple of big hurdles, but the Taproot Assets Protocol, which was developed in 22, I think, that's going to allow them to generate and issue. They're going to issue and manage tokens right on the base chain and into Lightning. It's going to be huge as far as liquidity and channels. And, you know, Lightning's changed. I mean, Lightning right now has got less channels, but they're more efficient. So I guess you'd call them larger. I could see Tether being just a huge facilitator, or I guess, to growth for Lightning. And here's another thing, okay, before I stop. Here's one last thing. Where is Tether? Where's Tether's chain right now? It's Tron. it's Ethereum. You know, two shit coins that I don't care. You know, if I stepped in them, I'd probably throw my shoes away. So is that where we want it, or do we want it on Bitcoin? And you can't stop it. And again, you know, when I gave people Bitcoin down in El Salvador, sometimes they would immediately convert it into Tether. And did I look at my cab driver and say, hey, no, that's stupid. Don't do that. No, I wouldn't be so arrogant as to tell this man how to hold his wealth. You know, I believe in sovereignty and being responsible for yourself. You know, put on your big boy pants and walk around. You know, when you get to my age, you know, you've seen enough that you realize that, you know what, it's on you. You got to be the guy that does the right thing, or gal. That is all.
Now, yeah. Now with that, you know, you're bringing Tether back onto the Bitcoin Lightning network, I think, which will bring billions of dollars worth of transactions now to Bitcoin. How big of a move do you think that this is? And do you think that that will basically change the game for all stable coins, where now we're having the inability to utilize Tether as a CBDC? Or do you still think that that's potentially a chance here?
Well, that's the scariest scenario, isn't it? Is that basically Tether turns into what is a CBDC. The only thing I'll say is that Tether has not had any competition yet. And their CEO says, bring it on. And he's going to get to see it soon. Because now that SAB 121 has been repealed, that's the law prohibiting, but just basically discouraging banks from holding Bitcoin. Now that that's been repealed, stand by. I mean, you're going to see, we've already seen State Street and Citibank, and Bank of New York's already in. All these banks are going to start wanting, they're going to custody, sell, trade, buy Bitcoin. Then they're going to start tokenizing on Bitcoin. Bitcoin is going to become the collateral, the most pristine, but liquid too. And with a trait that nothing else has, nothing. And that's why the Russian finance minister said that it has final settlement, unlike anything we've ever seen in the history of man, at the speed of light. It's coming. So I'm hoping that as Bitcoiners, if we don't like where this is going, that we have an option to get out of it. And I don't know. I'm like you. I don't know where it's going. I am truly just a working pleb, and I don't know where this is going. So I'm standing by. And, you know, and another thing, when those banks, they start tokenizing and they get Bitcoin, I'm not ever going to lend them jack shit unless I know they prove they have proof of reserves, just like Bitwise, River. I want to see proof of reserves. Otherwise, you'll never get a dime of my Bitcoin. And actually, I better say one last thing here, okay? Because this is important, especially for new people in this space. From, you remember what we saw last cycle. Bitcoin doesn't generate yield. It's a bearer instrument, no yield. So if you're getting yield, like I'm talking about someday in the future, you better figure out where that yield's coming from. Or you are the yield. If you can't figure it out, you are the yield. And you're going to get wrecked. I guess that's enough.
Yeah, no, I mean, of course, right? You are the yield. But the one thing I'm worrying about here, you brought up banks, right? So SAB 121, the FASB, all these different rulings. Now, do you think we're going to run into a point where potentially banks or, you know, companies are going to be claiming they own Bitcoin, and then it's going to be the next, maybe FTX or Celsius is the run where, you know, they're issuing these paper Bitcoin notes, so to speak? Is that something that worries you? Maybe the ETFs are the culprit. Do you have a paper Bitcoin worry here in this cycle?
FTX did create paper Bitcoin. Everybody should know that. There's no doubt whatsoever. Do you remember when they finally were discovered and they looked at their books and there was no Bitcoin left? They were supposed to have billions of Bitcoin. It was other people's Bitcoin. So yeah, they created paper Bitcoin. So what's unique about Bitcoin? It's the fact that it is like it's the first third entry, triple entry bookkeeping system we've ever had. And what that means is you can lay back right now in the studio, look up at the ceiling, and picture yourself looking at the entire Bitcoin ledger. You can see everything that occurs on it. And that is true. So when I say these products are coming, what is incumbent upon us if we're going to use these products? Again, you've got to know where the yield is coming from. You know, talking about Tether one last time, you know, they're over-collateralized. They're at 105% collateralized. They are, in my mind, there's no doubt in my mind that they're secure and that they're holding what they hold. They had a 25% drawdown that would have killed every company that I can possibly think of during that FTX debacle. And they just kept chugging away. I'm not worried about that. But what I am worried about is rehypothecation, the idea that these institutions are going to somehow create what you just said, paper Bitcoin. And it's incumbent upon us not to use these products if we're not comfortable knowing what they're doing with them. And, you know, you can do that with Ledin. I mean, you can see it with River. You can know what's coming. The problem with the products we have now is they're like 12 to 14% interest. That's not going to work for what I want to do. You know, I want to do the buy, borrow, die strategy. I want to live forever with my Bitcoin. I want to pass it on to my kids. I want to see my grandkids with it someday. I want to see them with a Bitcoin ticket sitting on the train having a great time in life. And the only way you can really do that reliably over centuries, long after you're gone, is through that technique. And the only way to do that is to somehow find a yield on that Bitcoin. Now, Saylor's talked about this in three separate podcasts and one talk on CNBC about yield and banks. And I think it's coming. Again, I would just ask you, how would we stop it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I've had Caitlin Long on the show, and she kind of described as banks almost being like Lightning node proxies, where whenever you want to spend your Bitcoin, you know, they would have those giant Lightning nodes, which would be tough to maintain for the average person. And then they get a little bit of that quote unquote yield. And then anything you keep in your bank account, let's call it, would be used to help, I guess, fund this node, which would give you some yield back on those transactions. So I think, I don't know the full ins and outs of it, but allegedly that's how like Custodia Bank is looking at it. And I don't know if she said anything since then that has thus changed that claim, but I think that that's how at least Custodia Bank who's looking at it, but they also want to have 108% of your overall reserves in the bank, which is uncommon, right? I mean, we have banking systems now that seemingly you don't have to have any of the reserves in there. You know, fractional reserve banking is, you know, here to stay, it seems. So, you know, with these rulings that passed, do you have significant guard up when it comes to the traditional financial system getting into Bitcoin, and what negatives can come out of that?
Well, again, I'll just start right off the bat. Can't stop it. It's inevitable. You cannot stop it. Secondly, I will tell you that I'm a huge fan of Caitlin. I mean, she's smart, and I would use her as one of my signposts. I follow her, and I would use her as somebody to look for in this space to tell me how to safely do what we're discussing. Because I do believe, and you know, she was denied 108% over-collateralized, totally safe bank, proof of reserves, everything that you could possibly want, safest bank you could have, and denied as part of that choke point 2.0, which is what a nightmare. So, God, Brandon, I just don't know.
I'm putting you on the spot here, George. I'm putting you through some mental gymnastics here, man.
It's just such a tricky subject because people have almost like a knee-jerk reaction to this. And you know why? We're all sitting here. We got PTSD. You know, I've got it. I'm having flashbacks right now to 22. And it could color our judgment for what the future is. Now, I mentioned Hal Finney discussing this. He did. And Hal Finney clearly says in there that he sees this as a future, you know, that we're going to have these tokenized banks on Bitcoin. And other members in the community have talked about it too. And it has to do with the whole problem that we have in scaling. And if that's the case, if we're going to have to somehow scale off the base layer, we're going to see a lot of new products. For instance, I think we're going to see all kinds of sidechain activity, you know, like liquid Bitcoin I'm talking about, which I use, like I said, all the time with the Aqua wallet. We're going to see banks come into the space. Tether says, you know, the CEO says, I'm not worried about it, Paulo, because we're going to kick their ass. And one of the reasons is because he has a worldwide audience. And basically, U.S. banks are going to be very limited in who they reach. So again, I don't know, Brandon. I just can't answer that question. I just don't have an answer for it. That's all there is to it.
It's all good, George. You've been very generous with your time, and you've let me put you through some hoops and bounds here. So I really appreciate you coming on the show. Why don't you tell people where they could find out more about you and maybe get some of that artwork. Maybe get the artwork that's mining Bitcoin behind you.
Well, you know, that's a pretty cool piece. I like that piece. I don't know if I might sell it, but the thing is, you got to remember that, I mean, even it's got one of those small Mars landers in it, and it makes a little bit of noise. I mean, it's not the kind of thing, you know, your wife might go, what the hell's that thing making so much noise for? But it's not bad. It's just like a little fan, and it doesn't bother me at all. You know, if you're looking for me, just type my name in the internet on Google or whatever. I usually come up the first thing, George Bodine. If you're looking for me on X, that's the only platform I'm on. It's I use my call sign. It's capital JETHROE. 111, and you'll find me, or just type my name, George Bodine, and
there we go.
It's been good.
Yeah, it's been great. Unfortunately, I wasn't sharing a beer with you, but we'll have to share a beer at one of these conferences because it's been great getting to talk to you. So I'll put all that in the show notes. And George, thanks for coming out. And everybody go follow George. Smash the subscribe button, like button. And if you're listening on audio podcast, subscribe and rate the show 5 stars. So George, thank you so much for coming on the show and really appreciate it, man.
Well, you are welcome. And I'll tell you something, this has been a pretty deep conversation. And I actually appreciate that. You've really challenged. I mean, you've brought up some great subjects. So I've really enjoyed myself. And yeah, we'll do that. We'll have a beer sometime, partner. Thanks again.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here. And you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guest. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.